This is Radio EcoShock with your host, Alex Smith.
Have you figured out which climate risk is the biggest worry where you live? Maybe rising seas or hurricanes for coastal dwellers or wildfires out in the west? Ah, simple humans. Climate disruption is not that easy. A new study paints a picture of a complex beast that changes our lives and our world in hundreds of ways, including the economy, crops, strange new pests, diseases, the lot. A group of scientists led by the University of Hawaii just issued a massive catalog along with some cool maps of the cumulative impacts of climate change. They called in other world experts, including our guest, medical doctor Jonathan Patz, who serves as the director of the Global Health Institute. He's also a professor in health and environment at the University of Wisconsin-Madison, and he's trained a lot of people in this field. Dr. Patz, it's been 8 years since we last talked on this program. Welcome back to Radio EcoShock.
Oh, it's a pleasure to be back. Thanks for inviting me today.
I think this new paper, published November 19th in Nature Climate Change, is a genuine landmark in climate science. But before we go there, I'd like to talk about our most recent urgent example, the terrible wildfires in Northern California in November of this year. What health risks are thousands of those evacuees facing, do you think?
Well, of course, wildfires, you get smoke and inhalation problems. So, you know, it's really concerning. Not only are the people that are dying in these recent big fires, but of course the air pollution is tremendous. And I've seen headlines that San Francisco now has air quality worse than any place in China, at least temporarily, with these fires. The other thing that comes with fires is that once you have burned up all those trees, and it's a terrain with hills and slopes, that once it begins to rain, you can get mudslides. So there are mudslides and water contamination, but really the biggest issue with the fires, of course, is the smoke. And particulate pollution is one of the most harmful pollutants that we know of.
And judging by comments in social media and some emails that I receive, events like these California fires change people's mental health. Dr. Patz, what are we seeing, and are doctors ready for the stress and mental illness that could come as we face more harsh climate events?
Well, mental health is definitely one of the aspects affected from climate extreme events like tornadoes and hurricanes and fires. And of course, it's well documented, the issue of post-traumatic stress syndrome, from something like that. And when you have displaced populations and homeless people, that absolutely adds to the stress. You also have concern about feeling uneasy, especially if you live in a flood-prone area or a place that is likely to have climate extreme disasters. You're always living on the edge and wondering when the next disaster is going to happen. So it's been pretty well documented that there's mental health stress even beyond post-traumatic stress syndrome. And there even is evidence, in fact, studies that we did in Milwaukee looking at who is admitted to hospitals during extreme heat waves, we saw an increase in suicide attempts. And there have been several papers recently talking about extreme heat waves and suicide, as well as an increase in interpersonal violence. So people simply, I don't know if it's a matter of anger and the heat and increasing tempers with temperature, but there's evidence about increases in conflict and suicides and depression and post-traumatic stress with these extreme disasters.
Yes, I remember seeing that after the years-long drought in the Murray-Darling agricultural region in Australia. Some farmers did despair. They took their own lives, and Indian farmers have killed themselves after repeated crop failures. It's not a pretty subject. And I think another underestimated health impact is the long echo of these severe events, whether it's fires or floods or whatever. We see the immediate damage to buildings and infrastructure, but it's harder to see an illness that culminates years later from inhaling toxic smoke, for example. Do you want to talk to us about that delay factor, the sort of hidden nature of this damage?
You know, something that is really concerning is and very hidden is the effect on pregnant women and the effect on the fetus. Studies have shown that pregnant women that are exposed to fire smoke, if it's during a critical time in the pregnancy, they can give birth to small for gestational age infants and have health issues there. Another sort of invisible problem that was shocking to me was that in parts of the world that are in low-lying areas near the coast, as we get sea level rise, what happens to the groundwater with sea level rise? You get infiltration of salt water, so salination of the aquifers. And so it's been found that in some parts of the world, there's a higher incidence of hypertension of pregnancy. It's called preeclampsia, which can be a very serious condition. So there's something most of us wouldn't be thinking about as a consequence of climate change. Part of it is sea level rise, you know, to have a health effect as indirect as that. You know, sea level rise, salt water in the you know, that you're drinking, and then pregnancy complications. These are things that are not straightforward, like a heat wave, like a fire, like a hurricane, that are very obvious direct effects. There are a lot of these indirect effects that they may take time to develop in the case of a pregnant mother and the fetus, and in other cases. So that's something that it's really important to be thinking more broadly, and is something that this report, this new study, was trying to take a much more comprehensive look at the real risks that are out there.
Let's get down to work on this new paper. The title is Broad Threat to Humanity from Cumulative Climate Hazards Intensified by Greenhouse Gas Emissions. What makes this paper new and different from the thousands of specialty studies we have seen in the past few decades?
Well, we've known for a long time about climate change. We've known that it has impacts across all sectors. It's important for the listeners to know that climate change is real. It's now. It's through more than 30 years of assessing the science of climate change. Every United Nations Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change report shows with more certainty that, you know, climate change is upon us. It's caused by human activity, mostly burning fossil fuels. And the impacts that are of concern have been looked at in isolation. So what is the impact of extreme climate on the food sector? What is the impact on infrastructure? There have been studies that try to integrate across sectors, but it's hard to do that. And this study made a special attempt to look at studies across all sectors and try to combine them into one comprehensive risk assessment. This team, I was a part of it, but it was, you know, led by Hawaii. The team, they looked through 12,000 papers and found 3,000 studies that were really good enough to really analyze and look at. And they found 89 climate-sensitive attributes that are relevant to human society. You know, and these are, you mentioned, these are cross sectors of health, food, water, infrastructure, the economy, and security. And they, from looking at these 3,000 studies, they wanted to look at the ones where there are really clear examples, where we know bad outcomes have occurred with extreme climate conditions. The team defined these climate hazards looking at 10 different types of hazards. For example, warming, specific heat waves, precipitation, flooding, droughts, fires, storms, sea level rise, changes in land cover, and changes in the ocean chemistry, as in acidification of the ocean. And so looking across those 10 different hazards and the 89 different climate-sensitive pathways, That turns out to be 89 times 10, or 890 documented ways that climate can affect us. And of those, they found about half of those had very clear examples in the published literature of very robust effects. In other words, you know, a documented major flood event where people died, or a heat wave where people died. And they and came up with the 467 clear pathways where climate change is definitely affecting our human civilization. And for me, you know, I'm in the health field. Of those ways that climate affects us, about a third of them were affecting health.
Yes, health was a big part of this study. I could see that. And the whole thing comes with this cool interactive map. I put my cursor over my home or over India or Scotland or anywhere, and I can see what the cumulative climate threats may be. And to be frank, at first when I looked, it didn't look that bad, even in the year 2100. And just as I was thinking, well, we could survive this, I realized the map defaults to the best case scenario, and that assumes we store and capture gigatons of carbon somehow. So I set the map to our real current pathway, RC8.5, the business-as-usual stuff, and it looks like continuing disasters almost all over the world. Is that where we are now, Jonathan? Is that where we're heading?
Well, it is where we are heading at the moment. And in fact, parallel to the work from this paper, the United Nations Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change released a new report just on October 8th, following up the Paris Agreement, where we're trying to limit warming around the world to 2 degrees centigrade, and if possible, try to keep it down to just a 1.5 degrees centigrade warming. And in that report, the conclusion was that we are in for rapid warming unless we can cut our emissions by 45% by the year 2030. So in other words, 12 years from now, we need to cut our fossil fuel emissions by almost half and then get to net zero carbon emissions by 2050. So that report is talking about the climate system responding to all of the greenhouse gases that we are emitting. And that's a pretty stark conclusion that how quickly we need to turn things around. Because if we don't, as this new paper points out, there are so many ways that climate hazards affect us in a negative way, be it from an incredible heat wave. And this paper identified 780 distinct heat waves, where in each heat wave people died, and major floods. There was a flood in 1998 in China that killed 3,000 people. And the famine, the droughts from 1980s in Ethiopia killed 800,000 people, or almost a million people in the drought from famine. And, of course, we know that there are many diseases that are sensitive, be it malaria, other mosquito-borne diseases and waterborne diseases. So we know how dire the impacts are, and we see that the need to reduce our burning of fossil fuels, according to the latest United Nations report, it's a call for immediate reductions, getting down within 12 years. Here's the opportunity, is that if we really need to cut emissions that quickly, and the consequences are dire if we don't, if we look at this as a human health issue, think about what does burning fossil fuel do right now. If you forget about the climate system, you burn fossil fuel, you burn coal, you burn oil, and you get PM2.5, these dangerous fine particles. And it's estimated from the World Health Organization that 7 million people die every year from air pollution. So if we were to get to clean energy and decarbonize our economy, even if you're not thinking about climate change, it's an immediate, amazing public health benefit simply to get off of fossil fuels. The other aspect of fossil fuels, as we are driving gasoline-powered vehicles all over the place, causing pollution, but that also promotes physical inactivity. And according to the World Health Organization, more than 5 million people die every year from sedentary lifestyles, not moving around enough by foot or biking. So there's another golden opportunity to get away from fossil fuels for transportation and improve opportunities for people to either walk, bike, walk to transit and have decent transit, maybe electric-powered transit, but the electricity has to come from clean energy sources. So I view this challenge of quickly ramping down our emissions and trying to get to a low-carbon society as a huge opportunity for public health. And with that public health opportunity, I hope that decision makers seize upon this and say, you know, turning this issue around and trying to mitigate emissions and stop the climate change problem is an immediate opportunity that we can't afford not to take because of the immediate public health benefits.
You know, I'm thinking of the people who had to leave New Orleans after Hurricane Katrina. They spread all over the United States, and now we have thousands of people in Northern California who have no place to live. Some of them will have to leave. I'm wondering, do you expect to see climate refugees in numbers seldom seen during modern times? And if so, has that already begun?
Well, you know, I do worry about this, and I think it has begun. When I look at the list of pathways through which climate change affects our health, you can run down the list of direct effects of heat waves, the ill effects of stagnant air masses and air pollution, diseases carried by cold-blooded vectors, like insect vectors, like malaria, dengue, and Zika virus, and the extremes of the water cycle and water contamination, the mental health issues after storm disasters and the post-traumatic stress. But there's one other one that I always include, and it's forced population displacement. Some people call this environmental refugees. And if you look at the one example is the Syrian civil war, where we've seen millions of forced refugees and hundreds of thousands of people being killed in the war. That civil war happened to be preceded by the worst drought in the instrumental record for Syria. And it was documented with that drought that there was rapid movement from rural areas where the crops were failing. Rural to urban migration was four times faster than normal. So people were flooding into cities. The food prices were going up. People were riding in the streets. And so it will be very hard to prove this, but the correlation is very concerning that, you know, that civil war in Syria was preceded by the worst drought that they've ever had in their recorded history. So this is very concerning to me about the havoc that extreme climate will have on natural resources and on food supplies and forcing people to be moving around. That causes problems not only for the refugees that are moving into places they have no shelter, or they're moving into places where they have no immunity to diseases that are in those new places, or vice versa. They're bringing diseases into places where the home population has no immunity. I think this is an issue that's so big. I sometimes call the climate change refugee crisis as the iceberg under the tip of the iceberg, that it could be that large. Very difficult to study, very hard to tease out the influence of politics and corrupt government compared to climate stresses on the natural environment. But I'm very concerned about the forced movement of people, and it has all sorts of knock-on effects from diseases to mental stress to violence. Lots and lots of problems with that.
You're listening to EcoShock Radio for the world.
I'm Alex Smith. Get it all at our website, ecoshock.org.
This is Radio EcoShock with your host, Alex Smith.
You are listening to Radio EcoShock. I'm your host, Alex Smith. My guest is Dr. Jonathan A. Patz from the University of Wisconsin-Madison. He is the co-author of a groundbreaking study that adds up the multiple threats posed to us all by climate change. So governments here and abroad are set up to respond to one-off emergencies. They may have different departments even to deal with, say, agricultural failures versus a hurricane. What does this new study suggest for government organization and response?
Yeah, that's a great question. It's something that we've all been asking and governments have been asking, and there have been attempts to set up interagency efforts, you know, like the U.S. Global Change Research Program and others, you know. So there is an awareness that we really need to do a better job of working across agencies, across sectors. But we fail, you know. We don't do a great job at this. And I think that, you know, this paper points out that we need to do a better job of looking at the problem of climate change and taking a very collaborative approach here to make sure that it's not in the typical silos or tunneled vision approach of somebody focuses on food, someone focuses on infrastructure, that everything is interrelated. And if we don't do a better job at looking at this in a systems approach, like this paper tries to do, to really look across sectors and look at the whole part, everything, rather than just divide it into sections. That's the only way to do this in a way that will really understand the risk. And the flip side of that is that if these risks are so cross-sectoral and so interdependent of each other, so too will the solutions. And if we can optimize solutions that can have multiple benefits, one example would be, you know, heat waves in an urban environment. Imagine what you would do if you had green roofs, which would reduce the urban heat island effect, would reduce the heavy runoff when you have heavy precipitation, which, you know, is part of the story of climate change, increases of the water cycle. You can grow food and, you know, be more food secure. So there are things that we can do that can have multiple benefits across sectors. So I worry the risks are very complicated, but that also means that if you can get some really prime solutions, you know, to do one thing that has multiple benefits, that's where we want to go to optimize those responses.
Did the scale and the scope of measuring hundreds of cumulative threats from climate change have an effect on you personally?
Well, Alex, I've been studying the effects of climate change for more than 20 years, and I have been fully aware of how bad the impacts could be, especially in health. And we're so used to looking at single agents of disease, be they bacteria or a virus or a chemical, a toxin, and we rarely are confronted by challenges that have so many pathways through which they can harm us. And climate change is one of them, from the direct effects of storms and heat waves to the indirect effects and infectious diseases and malnutrition, mental health, and environmental refugees. So for so long, I have known that it's a bad news story, and that climate change I view as the largest public health challenge of our lifetime. But with that, I have also learned that when you look at the root cause of climate change, which is primarily burning fossil fuels, as well as cutting rainforest, because that's about a quarter of the problem as well, because trees absorb CO2, but by disrupting the forest, but mostly burning fossil fuels, we have created a very unhealthy world, be it from air pollution to cities that are, you know, not conducive of promoting physical fitness, you know, cities that are designed for motor vehicles rather than for people. And I, you know, even food systems, you know, the types of food and over-reliance on meat, especially in rich countries, these are non-sustainable ways of life. And we've created, you know, a fairly unhealthy situation environmentally and behaviorally. So I see this as, you know, this is where we can, if we can turn the Titanic, if we can turn the direction right now. Fossil fuels are, you know, there are many benefits that we've had from fossil fuels, but now we understand the problem, and we understand that when you burn fossil fuels and you use the atmosphere like a toilet, and we have no company is paying for the emissions other than we are paying with our lives and our environment. That's where we need to take this and use it as an opportunity to get to a clean energy society and not only reduce the risk of climate change, but have more immediate effects of a healthier society and livable cities. And basically, it's a huge opportunity. So I am optimistic that when I look around and I see the number of mayors and governors and many heads of state that are moving forward and going carbon free, you know, there are towns in Texas where there's plenty of oil production that are going solar and investing in wind. Recently, the Museum of Coal Mining put solar panels on its roof, you know. So I look around the world, and at the local level, things are happening very fast, and even in industry and the business sector, I think there's a movement to invest in low-carbon technology now.
Well, for the sake of our health and the climate, I hope that is where we find coal mining, is in a museum. We have been talking with one of the pioneers in the field of health and climate change, Dr. Jonathan A. Patz. He's from the University of Wisconsin-Madison. He was called in as an expert for the new paper, Broad Threat to Humanity from Cumulative Climate Hazards Intensified by Greenhouse Gas Emissions. That was just published in the journal Nature Climate Change on November 19th. Find links to follow up on all this in my weekly show blog at ecoshock.org. Dr. Patz, thank you so much for sharing your insight with us.
Thank you, Alex.
If you have a story idea or thoughts on something you've heard, contact us, radio@ecoshock.org. That's radio@ecoshock.org.